But I will say that the vast majority of people, if I ask them and I paint that picture, do you want to live the quote unquote, let's call it the American dream? They're going to say, well, that's nice, but I want more. Like, I want to drive like a nice car. Like, I want to buy the new property and the nice house and go on the vacation 2-3 times a year. But if you want that, then the system isn't providing that. It's not going to give you that just by putting money into your 401k and investing $1,000 a year into your Roth. Like, it doesn't work that way. You have to use your money to work for you in other ways to create that type of wealth that most people are looking for.
Hi, I'm Wyatt. And I'm Grace. And you're listening to Our Dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. And we're back with our Experts Corner interviews. Every Friday, you guys know we try to find some expert investors in the short-term rental world or experts in topics that we want to talk about. And we have a very special guest today, Mr. Nelson So. Nelson is a financial literacy expert, a TEDx speaker and an author, CPA, who helps people understand how money really works and make smarter and help us make smarter financial decisions. So Nelson, I'm super excited about this conversation because I know you gear a lot of this toward the younger generation and kind of point us to the holes that we miss in the school system. And so I appreciate you joining us today on the Vacation Rental Revolution.
Yeah. Hey, Sean, thanks so much for having me. This is really, really exciting because financial literacy is my bread and butter. I love it and love helping the current and next generation of leaders learn the financial literacy foundational skill set that they need to succeed in life.
Love it. Love it. And you and I are going to have a really fun conversation today because I am so of the belief that we are just not taught the right things that we should be taught in school when it comes to financial literacy. So this will be a really fun conversation. Before we dive into those details, I love to get the backstory, the background. It's always fun to hear where people come from, what got you interested in this world, and kind of what led you to the path that you're on right now. And so why don't you take us back to the background, the backstory, and then you and I will dive into the conversation.
Yeah, for sure. So my educational background is I studied accounting here locally in Vancouver at University of British Columbia. And shortly after that, I got my chartered accountant license, now called Chartered Professional Accountant or CPA. And I've built my career as a CPA for a decade, about 10 years, and started in public practice doing auditing and left to work in industry and had this, you know, big dream of becoming the CFO of a publicly traded company like Microsoft one day, and quickly learned that that wasn't really the dream anymore after a couple of years. So I decided to pivot a little bit and change my path into entrepreneurship. And I think what surprised me, I call it my aha moment, was when I'm a CPA and I realized that I don't even have my own personal finances in order. And one day I was just sitting down, just writing in my journal. And I was thinking, like, if I'm a CPA and I don't have my money in order and I'm supposed to be like a numbers expert, how do other people who aren't numbers savvy, how do they figure it out? And then, you know, a couple of years ago, I was approached by the TEDx organization with my story. And they said, do you want to share your story on the state, on the big stage and, you know, find some people that might relate to that. And initially I was like, no, I don't want to do that. It's embarrassing. Like, I'm a CPA. I should have my stuff together. But I mustered up the courage and shared my story on that TEDx stage. And the response has been massive around people coming out and coming forward and saying, you know what, I'm a CPA as well. And I wish I had my money together and I'm on the right path to getting it there. So that sparked the journey of, you know what, financial literacy is so important. Like, it doesn't matter what age, what stage, what type of career you do. It's a foundational and critical life skill that we all need to know. So that brings us to where we are today, where I'm a financial literacy advocate and expert, and I go around teaching financial literacy to not only students, but young adults and people of all stages of life. Like, what right. skills do we need to know that we weren't taught?
And I think it's amazing. And it's funny how when you tell a certain story and you're like, man, it is kind of embarrassing. I don't want to say this, or I don't want to really put that out there. How many people it now gives permission to say, I'm in that same situation. I'm so glad you said that. I'm so glad to hear somebody else kind of feels the same way, because, you know, it's one thing when you learn this stuff when you're younger, but you know, my guess is, you know, financial literacy is something that, you know, older people, we weren't taught, right? Like, it's like, you know, you get different generations and nobody is really taught this stuff in school. And so let's start there. Like, I'm a big believer that that stuff is left out, and for many different reasons, but you know, it's where it, we don't learn financial literacy in the sense of having our, you know, our finances in order, our financial house built correctly with the right foundations and the right skill sets and mindsets and everything else that goes along with that. So where do you start with somebody when you say, hey, listen, here's what we thought about money and here's what we really need to be thinking about? Or do you, we're like, when it goes back to the education system, like why are we not taught this stuff?
That's a great question. How many lines do we want to cross here today?
Right. You can cross any line you want with me because you and I will probably agree on a lot of this stuff. We might make some people upset, but I think it's okay, right? It's good to have conversations that of why, because I'm with you. I think that sometimes we do cross a little bit of those lines when we call out why we don't think that stuff's taught, and I'm okay crossing them.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for that. So I'll start by saying that when I talk to people about money, I always start with, you know, hey, Sean, what do you want to build? Like, what's your goal? Like, do you want to, you know, earn your median incomes? Let's call it $65,000 a year and pay your mortgage and do that for 30 years and then retire. And does that bring you happiness? If so, then great. Keep doing that. But if you come to me and say, Nelson, like, I want to build legacy. I want to build financial freedom, generational wealth. We're having a totally different discussion. So now when we point to the school system, well, let's break it down. Where is money taught in the school system? Well, it's taught generally speaking, and I know some schools, and I give big kudos to those institutions that are pushing it forward. But generally speaking, money is taught in math class.
Yeah.
And I understand that, right? Like money has numbers and math has numbers and they go together. But the real question is, do we have the right people teaching about money in math class? I know that when I went through it, like my math teacher, you know, no knock to them, but I don't think that money was in the forefront of their brain and building wealth was in the forefront of their brain. Like they were more thinking about, you know, how do we use these graphing calculators and how can I show you compounding and the graph where it starts at zero and then a hockey sticks up. But nobody really teaches you the fundamentals of how that applies to money. So to start off, I think it's taught in the wrong capacity and with the wrong people.
And also, let me ask you this, because I've always thought that, you know, building wealth, financial literacy has multiple stages to it, right? It's understanding money generally, like, okay, like I need to kind of get form, like, because there's a lot of times where we think money's a bad thing, you know, making money is, you know, it's a negative thing, you know, when you roll it back to religious, you know, examples and stuff, it's like, you were taught to be meek and humble and like, hey, listen, we don't need all these extra extravagant things. So sometimes it comes with a negative connotation. So your mindset about making money and building wealth sometimes starts, in my opinion, from the wrong standpoint, right? It's like, hey, listen, you don't need to be over the top with that stuff. But then one of the things that I have a lot, because we work with investors, we work with investments, is people think that an investment is going to solve their money problems. And most of the time, I always say investing is like the last step, right? You have to learn how to, you know, handle money. You have to learn how to live below your means. You need to save some money. You need to have a nest egg for a rainy day. Then we start talking about investing. And a lot of times you have people, we want to skip all those steps because we just don't even really understand the concept of all of it. And I think that financial literacy, my guess is, Nelson, that you really kind of tackle all of those different aspects of money.
Oh man, I love that you said that, because to me, investing, if you think of like a birthday cake, investing is like the top part, right? Yeah. And all that foundational stuff in the middle is like your budgeting and your rainy day fund and all those things that we should have in place before we even think about investing. So the way that I describe financial literacy is exactly what you said. It's learning to understand how money, like what money is and then how it works. And I think I can speak for most people. We know what money is, but the majority of people don't actually understand how it works, right? Like we understand money from a transactional perspective. Like if I go to the grocery store and I give $10, I can buy groceries with it. But that's just the very fundamental use of money as a tool. If we're talking about multiplying money, a lot of people don't know where to start and they jump right into investing, but that's not always the best place.
It's almost, you know, I argue with that it's not the right spot for a lot of people, honestly. It's, you know, if you have not, it's why lottery winners and, you know, historically lose the money is gone within like 3.5 years, like a lot of like these big windfalls of money, because they didn't understand money and the management of money and the savings of money, the core concepts and the fundamentals of it. And when they don't understand the fundamentals of it, they just think that it's going to be there. And you know, you're going to, whatever habits you have right now, it's just going to compound if you have more money or less money, right? And so it's building those foundational habits and understanding of it. So you mentioned, okay, we understand the utility of money, right? We understand we can use it as a resource to go buy stuff and do stuff. We understand we can pay bills, whatever. We understand the utility of money. When you say we don't really understand the concept of money, what do you mean by that?
I think a lot of people, they see on social media, oh, like use money to make money, or if you're trading time for money, you're doing the wrong thing. And a lot of those, like social media, that's a whole different topic we'll probably get into as well. But I think that what people see on their phones or on social media about money, they don't understand it fully and deeply. Like, what does it actually mean to make your money work for you? Right? Like if somebody says, well, I have it in my, in Canada, we have a tax-free savings account similar to the Roth IRA. Right. Like a lot of people will just deposit money into that and say, oh, yeah, hey, I'm my money's in there and I'm invested. But the truth is you're not, because like more than half the people just leave it as cash. So your money is actually doing the opposite of that, because you're getting, you know, the opposite effect of inflation towards your dollars. Right. So I think it's the understanding of how to do these actions when we talk about making money work for you or stop trading time for money. Like, what are the steps we need to take to actually do that, so that we can multiply our money in a way that we couldn't do if we were to work like hourly or just leave it in a savings account?
Yeah. Or, and also, like, not everybody has the ability just to quit their job, right? Like, I think we all want to have these passive income investments that all of a sudden allow us to make all this money and we don't have to work anymore. We don't want to trade time for money. Like, there's such a, you know, if you're trading time for money, you're never going to be wealthy, which I agree with, if in a, you know, an overall overarching statement. But at the end of the day, we need to, most of us need to trade time for money and figure out how to live below those means, take that money, save it, budget it, be able to start to do something else with it so that we can start to multiply that money, like you mentioned. But a lot of times it starts with trading time for money. It starts with saying, how can I now accelerate that active income or that money that I've made into something different or something else? Because most of us don't just wake up one day with a passive investment portfolio that is paying our bills while we sleep, right? You have to build from that. And a lot of times it's built from the things that everybody tells us we don't want to do. And and the reality is, a lot of times it starts with saying, hey, listen, I got to figure out how to, I'm trading time for money right now. I got to figure out how to take this active income and understand the concepts of money that you're talking about to start to build a better life down the line, right?
Exactly. There's actually a story, I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's like the UPS driver, I think his name is Theodore Johnson, back in the 1950s, like this guy, he amassed like a $70 million net worth and counting. Like, it's probably still growing today through generational wealth. But he worked as a UPS driver and was earning no more than, I think it was like $15,000 a year, but he amassed like a $70 million wealth bucket. And he did that through saving 20% of his income, putting it aside, and then investing that money into companies that he believed in. I think he even bought like UPS shares or something like that and just held them for an extended period of time. But it's exactly what you're saying, Sean. It's, what do we do with the money that we earn, and how can we put it into like the fast lane, right? It doesn't mean we have to quit our jobs tomorrow and stop trading time for money, because like we got to pay our bills somehow. But how do we use the tools that are available to us to accelerate or to build what we're trying to build?
Yeah. So if we were talking and I came to you and I said, Nilsson, man, I'm embarrassed. I'm making pretty good money. I'm, you know, paying my bills. I feel like I'm always getting behind, and, you know, like I should be doing better than I'm doing. What am I missing here? Like most people, my guess is, are missing very similar things, right? We're missing the very basic fundamentals of what we're talking about. Well, where do you start with somebody? If I came to you at that point, you're like, hey, listen, Sean, don't worry about it. Here's what we're going to do. I want you to start here. We're going to move to here. Like, where do you take somebody through that process?
Yeah. If somebody tells me like every month they're behind on their bills or they just can't make ends meet, we need to look at like an audit, like a personal audit of where your finances are going. And it's almost like a cash flow analysis, right? Like if you work a full-time job, you know, every month, if you're full-time employed, you know how much is coming in after your deductions and taxes. Great. Now, where does the money go after that? You know, there's a lot of like funny memes on the internet where it's like payday and then, you know, they're celebrating and then it's like 2 minutes later and then all the money's gone.
Yeah.
Right. And it's funny and we laugh at it, but it's not funny when it's actually your financial situation. So for the people out there who, you know, they are realizing that they're spending more than they earn, you really need to sit down and look at line by line on your credit card statement, on your bank accounts, where's the money going? And then assess like which ones are actually needed. Like if it's a home, if it's a house payment and you're realizing, you know what, like I can't afford this house anymore, maybe it's time to step back a little bit and say, you know what, for a short term, I'm going to downsize my home. We're going to make ends meet. We're going to work hard. And then eventually we'll get back to where we want to be, but it'll take some time to rebuild that.
Yeah. And exactly. I totally agree. Couldn't agree more. When we talk to people and we go through strategy calls with people, that's exactly what we're doing. Most of the time, they're not in a spot where they're not paying their bills. People aren't usually thinking about buying, you know, vacation homes if they're not paying their bills. But that is exactly where it starts. It's like, hey, listen, how much are you making? How much are you spending? And the goal, one of the first money concepts that you should realize is you got to live below your means. You got to spend less than you make. If you want to accelerate your wealth building journey, that's the number one concept is spend less than you make, right? And so, and I love that that's where you're going to start. You're like, hey, listen, this is a basic concept. A lot of the things that you're probably teaching people, they're fairly simple, right? Sometimes it's not as easy to pull off and do because sometimes you're like, well, I got this extra money. Maybe I want to go on the vacation. Maybe I want to spend some money on, you know, an extra night out or dinner out or whatever else. Sometimes you have to cut that stuff out. Mm-hmm. And so if now I'm spending less than I make and I'm starting to save and I'm doing a good job of saving money, when you start to, you know, I know that you're not necessarily a financial advisor, you're not giving people investment advice, but when you start to look at those situations and you start to talk about investments with people, I'm just curious. My opinion, because we do talk to people about investments, is a lot of people are looking for those home run investments. They're looking for those big quick hits. And I've always been a believer that, like, I was there. I've done that before. And so I know I can speak to this. I know that mindset. I want the home run. I finally am living below my means. I'm saving up money. I want to put this money in something. And it's really fun to see, you know, like in today's day and age, if I would have put money in Nvidia or, you know, or if I would have put it in crypto and it's, you know, I've got these big hits. But real wealth, in my opinion, now all of a sudden we need to start looking at different time horizons, right? And a lot of times we look at such a short-term time horizon on whether I want to put money into something or not. And the longer time horizon you have, usually the better wealth building journey you're going to have long-term. And a lot of times they're more conservative investments. They're going to be, you know, they're maybe not having the biggest swings and you're going to be a little more conservative because when you look at something through a 3, 5, or 10 year time horizon, most investments can look pretty good and perform pretty well. If you look at them through a, you know, 3 or 6 month time horizon, a lot of times you can poke holes in a lot of things. And we tend to lean toward those bigger, the ones that are a lot more volatile, that might be a lot more risky because they are the only ones that actually have the potential to do anything in a 3 or 6 month period.
Mm-hmm. And I think where I would actually start with that, when somebody goes, hey, Nelson, you know what? I spend less than I earn. Let's go. Like, I'm ready. I would say, hold on. Let's take a step back for a second. Let's have an emotional conversation about money. And let's help understand that, you know what? These are conversations that aren't going to be comfortable all the time. Because even though you spend less than you earn, it doesn't guarantee that you're not being inefficient with your money.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the second layer that we look at. Okay, great. You know what? You spend less than you earn. Perfect. That's like the baseline to even have a conversation about, let's start trying to build wealth here. Then the next step is you kind of have to filter that stuff out, right? Like take a filter and go through it. What do I need? What do I want? Where can I cut back? And then the next layer is actually looking at debt. And I would say most people hold debt, and debt is actually, it's misconceived by a lot of people. Like they don't understand that not all debt is created equal, yeah. Right? And coming from a real estate background, you understand this, but I think that people confuse good debt, which could be things that, you know, you use debt to purchase an asset that could increase in value or bring cash flows, with bad debt, which is like consumer debt, high interest, credit card debt, yeah. You know, payday loans, that type of thing. And the next filter is to look at your debt and say, which debt is good, which debt is bad. And before even thinking about investing, we need to eliminate all the bad debts, or as best as we can. Because the chances are, Sean, is that your bad debt on a credit card is charging you 20% interest compounded, but you're trying to earn 7 to 10% on your money. So when you net that out, Like your $100 actually goes further if you pay off your credit card bill first and right. then go invest, because then you're just chasing.
I think that is a huge point to make for a lot of people, is how much consumer debt really eats into their ability to build wealth and grow wealth, and what, how much smarter it is to eliminate that before they take that extra money and start investing it. Because like you're saying, that it's usually not a zero sum game. You're usually mm-hmm. on the, you know, you're way, you're behind the eight ball when you're paying consumer debt, you know, at X amount, and then trying to make 7 to 10% on your investment. Just pay that off first, then move to that other seat. Then you're going to be so much further ahead. And it sometimes doesn't feel like that, because we're like, well, I need to be in these investments, and time helps me in these investments. And to your point of leverage, right? And real estate is an asset that is usually leveraged. And it can be, you can have, just because you're getting a loan on an investment property, there could be good and bad debt on those types of properties too. And they can be over leveraged, and they can be, you know, we're a fan of leverage on most of the properties that we buy, but there's certain properties that can only handle a certain amount of leverage before they get over leveraged. And it's not all created equal. There are properties and markets that we look at and we're saying, listen, we're never going to lever over 60% in this market or on this type of a property. And there are markets and properties that we're saying, I don't mind leveraging 90%, because it's a highly producing market property asset, and it could be a very good return on my investment by only having to put 10% down. And that leverage can be really good, but it's not all created equal. Just because you have debt on an asset like real estate doesn't mean it's good debt, because you have to figure out what is the actual leverage amount against that asset, right? Because you can overlever a real estate property, and we've seen it before. We saw it during the major crash in 2008 through 10. That was the biggest problem. There was all these loans that were allowing people to borrow 125% sometimes on home equity lines. And you're like, okay, well, that house of cards comes falling down pretty fast because it's over leveraged. And people are like, well, it was real estate debt. Well, it doesn't mean it's good debt, right?
Totally. And we're even seeing that in these types of real estate markets now, with super low interest rates here in Canada that we've been seeing for the last, 3 to 5 years. And we're starting to see people renew on 5-year fixed terms that interest rates are doubling, and they're getting sticker shock on their payments. We're seeing foreclosures. That's prime examples of overleveraged, quote unquote, good debt that's actually bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, so if somebody is like listening to this, my kids are, I have twins, they're 14 years old and they're homeschooled. They've always been homeschooled. And so we get to decide what curriculum they get. Right. And so, part of, you know, with what we do, and they have access to see a lot of the things that we're doing over the years with the real estate assets and everything else. But we sign them up and we pay for a financial literacy, course that Dave Ramsey puts on, right, through his group, right? And it's learning those budgeting things. It's learning to live below your means. It's learning to say, okay, what am I going to do with my savings? Where is it going to go? How am I going to access it? And we've really liked that. But there's limited, we found when we were looking at it, there's very limited resources for parents to point their kids in the right direction and being able to, rather than, you know, I know as parents, we always want to teach our kids this stuff, but it is nice to have options to send them. And so how do you help? I know you speak on a lot of this stuff. Do you guys have actual programs that you help kids with this kind of stuff as well?
Yeah. So those programs are in development. We do see that there is a void for credible resources. I mean, anybody can throw out a course or some sort of mastermind, but we really want credible professionals that have not only like the street cred of actually doing it themselves, but actually knowing the topics, and they're doing it for more than just, you know, trying to sell a membership or trying to sell a course. Yeah. Like for me, this financial literacy journey hits home because like, if I didn't flip the switch 10 years ago, I would have been down the wrong path, like buying, you know, cars to keep up with the Kardashians and the Joneses you know, showing off with material things. But now I understand wealth, and my goal really is to show other people how to do it too. And it's really not that hard, and anybody can do it. It just takes some sacrifice.
And what, talk to me, we briefly touched on social media. You know, I have a love-hate relationship with social media because of the business we're in. We put stuff on social with podcasts and YouTube and everything else. I'm much more of a long form guy, so you won't see a lot of flashy clips of me on with my, whatever for my Ferraris with air quotes. I don't have a
private
Ferrari.
Jet.
my private jets and my gold chains and everything else, you know, and looking like a rock star, but you won't see that. But that there's a lot of that online.
Yes.
And when it comes to finances, it seems like that's where, I mean, that's what sells, right? They're selling the sizzle. They're selling all this stuff. And it makes me cringe when I see it on the investment side all the time. On the financial literacy side, I'm curious, you know, what are some of the things we should pay attention to that we know, and how do we weed through all of that advice and information that's out there? Because you just mentioned it's important for you to have credible sources for this kind of stuff. And I would agree with you. On the financial literacy side, it was actually difficult for us as parents to go try to find some, you know, some credible, what we felt were credible resources to put in front of our kids. And so where do we find that, and how do we navigate the social landscape with social media now?
Yeah, it's I love that, because social media, you know, everybody's got a social media account, whether they say they do or don't, they're on there looking.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important when we look at, especially financial content, understand the backstory and the background of the person that's giving that content out. Just like you would vet any other major purchase or any advice that you would take, you have to do your own research first. And I think that that's always key. But social media is so quick and flashy, like the 30-second, 60-second Instagram reels. You know, you look at it and go, oh, shoot, maybe I should invest in GameStop. And then the stock goes up, and then all of a sudden it pumps down, right? And then a lot of people lost a lot of money. So how do we really find credible people? Well, look at their backgrounds. Yeah. Like for me, so I'm present on LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, and people can find me. They can find my resources, my TEDx talk. We wrote a book called Life Literacy. It's actually my second best-selling book, where we teach personal, professional and financial literacy through those resources. So find people who actually have done it, that are doing it for the right reasons, and they're not doing it to just sell a course. I really feel like the online e-commerce space has blown up over COVID, because everybody bought into this, you know, I can work from home and I can create a mastermind and sell this $999 course, and, you know, I'll walk away with my millions. But if somebody's out there just to sell a course or build a mastermind, but they haven't built anything else, that's a massive red flag.
I totally agree. And I'm glad you went there. That's that for us. It's what we say all the time, is just look at the track record and the experience of somebody. And if their experience is, and their money is coming from a course or the product or the mastermind or coaching or whatever else, and that's really where their experience lies, that's a pretty big red flag, especially when it comes down to any financial literacy concepts, any investing concepts, all of those different things, because those things just take time, right? A lot of times you just have to have the hours, the mistakes, the bumps, the bruises, and really understanding what these different worlds and how to navigate different. And when it comes to like investing, there's so many different options. There's so many different asset classes, and everybody can look like a genius online for 30 seconds. But when you really start to peel back the layers of the onion and look at their, you know, 20, 30, 40 year track record, that can uncover a lot of different things. And so I think that you're exactly right. And that's the easiest way to do it. I truly believe just do some due diligence and peel back some of those layers of the onion.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry. Did
I cut you off? I was going to say one thing about investing and with social media is, like, nobody's ever going to talk about their losses. Like, I'm not going to go on there and say, hey, Sean, you know, last year I lost 150 grand on this property that I, you know, shouldn't have invested in. I'm going to go on there and say, hey, look, I just made 25 grand on this property. And if you buy my $999 course, like, I can show you how to. And like, so we just have to really have to vet what we're looking at here.
And you know what's really crazy right now, and now I hope people I started talking about this a little bit more, and I hope people really start to realize this, because you might not even know. When you see all these things about I made all this money on this property, I made all this money on this investment or whatever else, it's very common in real estate where people are like, I just bought this property, here's the numbers, and they show you their projected returns. So they're like, I'm projecting $100,000 a year, I'm projecting that we're going to hit this. And it's this little thing that says projected returns. It makes it look like they're making that money, and they can just say whatever, like, hey, oh yeah, I'm hoping to make, or I'm projecting I'm going to make 100 grand. And it looks really, really good. I'm like, you should be looking at like actual deals. Actuals. You should be looking at actual case studies. Like, don't look at projected returns on anything. Like, look at your, like, what is things, how are things actually performing, you know? And so if you're vetting out deals and case studies and stuff like that. Look at like a real deal that was, you know, look at a case study for the last 2 or 3 years on a property that, and see how it actually performed. Don't look and say, well, you know, Sean bought this property for X amount and he's saying he's projecting to make $150,000 and it's a 50% cash on cash return. And he looks like a genius. I'm going to do that. It's like, well, you know, that's very rampant right now in the real estate space, especially is people are showing all these projected returns and you're like, okay, well, projected, I've been doing this long enough. Projected returns and actual returns can be a lot different depending on your underwriting, right?
Yeah.
So awesome. So I have another question. So we've always been taught, our parents' parents, it's like, hey, listen, you go to work, you go to school, you go to college, you get a job, you contribute to your 401k, you do all that kind of the things you're supposed to do. As a financial literacy expert, and when you look at that roadmap, that blueprint that seems to just be, it really hasn't changed in 50 years, right? It's like, hey, everybody, it feels like our parents' parents, everybody is like following the same path to retirement and a better life. And ultimately, like, I don't think it works. I think it leads people down the wrong road. I think we talk to a lot of people that are staring retirement down the, you know, they're like 10, 15 years away from retirement, looking at the 401k, the IRA, and they're like, this plan didn't work. I followed the rules. I did what I was supposed to do in their mind. And so what do you say about that to people that have been like in their mind following the rules of what they should be doing? Do you think that blueprint still works for people?
I think in certain markets it does. Let's look at our biggest spend, housing costs.
Yeah.
Like if you're in a market where housing costs are, you know, pretty low and, you know, pretty affordable, that could work. Right. But if you're in a housing market, I'm going to use Vancouver as an example, just because that's home for me. And
high price. Yeah.
We're a super high price. We're, you know, here in Toronto, right? Like it's insane what it costs for a box in the sky, a condo or an apartment. Right. So for people who follow that blueprint, I don't want to knock on them and say that it's wrong, because for some people it's right, because that's the goal that they have, is they just want to do their job and they want to buy a home and they want to have a, you know, a decent retirement fund and they want to rely on the pension systems and the government pension when they retire. And that's cool. And that's all good. But I will say that the vast majority of people, if I ask them and I paint that picture, do you want to live the quote unquote, let's call it the American dream? They're going to say, well, that's nice, but I want more. Like I want to drive like a nice car. Like I want to buy the new property and the nice house and go on the vacation 2-3 times a year. But if you want that, then the system isn't providing that. It's not going to give you that just by putting money into your 401k and investing $1,000 a year into your Roth. Like it doesn't work that way. You have to use your money to work for you in other ways to create that type of wealth that most people are looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. And I'm with you. I think that, I think those areas that are affordable to live, especially from a higher cost of housing, they're becoming fewer and farther between. And so then it makes it even more difficult to follow just that same path. And you really have to do more. You have to figure out how to accelerate, how to stay ahead of the cost of living, how to stay ahead of the cost of housing, and be able to take that active income and do something different with it. And a lot of times, that's not just contributing to your 401k and waiting to see what happens in 40 years. And, you know, now for a lot of people, that still can be something that they should be doing. That's something that people should still be doing at a very minimum, right? I'm not saying not to do it. I'm saying a lot of times, you know, when you figure out, and to your point, what do you want? Do you want more than that? Are you going to be able to live off of, you know, because that system is built to say, hey, listen, during your active earning years, let's say you're making $100,000 a year, you're actively putting it into your 401k. By the time you retire, hopefully your house is paid off, everything else, your bills are a lot less. And that pension and Social Security and everything else is going to maybe pay you half of that. You're going to make, you know, 40 or 50, and you should be able to live off of that. Well, a lot of times you're not able to, because maybe some of the stuff isn't paid off. Maybe you bought some other stuff along the way and your cost of living doesn't drop by half, right? You need more than that. And maybe you just want more than that out of life. And if that's the case, you're going to have to do something different, you know?
And I think to me, the sad part is the more conversations I have about wealth building and the path to get there, a lot of people actually don't want to admit that they actually want wealth. Like they admit that they want to be rich, and rich and wealth are two completely different things.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. And I think that people are scared to say that they want wealth because they know that it requires something to be different, and different is scary.
Yeah. And a lot, I think you're exactly right. And I think a lot of times it's like, I'll tell you, it reminds me, I coach my son's basketball team, and everybody wants to win, right? Everybody seems competitive and we want to win and we want to do things good. And real winners, like the guys that are really like, they'll lay it all out on the line, right? They're just out there and it's like, hey, listen, I'm going to give it all. And if it works, I'm super happy. If it doesn't work, I know I gave it my all. I would say more people are to that point where they say, I don't want wealth because maybe they don't believe they can do it. And it reminds me of these kids that I was coaching the other night, and they're playing the game and they're getting beat, and the team was really good and they were noticeably better than us. And a lot of the kids started not playing well, or they kind of got injured. And it was, instead of giving it their all and coming away with the loss, they kind of had that attitude of, I really didn't play that hard, or I was hurt and I wasn't able to finish the game. And I think that going after that wealth for a lot of adults, it kind of is that same mindset of, I kind of like winning. I would like to have it, but I'm also afraid to put it all out there and say I want it, because what if I don't? What if it doesn't happen? What if I don't achieve it? Then I can, if I don't achieve it, then I feel like a failure. And if I just say I wasn't really going that hard, I kind of give myself an excuse to be able to not achieve that goal. And I feel like that's the case a lot with people that I talk to that are higher income earners. They're putting themselves in a position to do something, and they're like, I kind of like being rich. I like having some money to spend, but building wealth and taking the steps necessary to build wealth, maybe they don't believe that they can fully do it, or they're a little bit afraid to do it. And they just give themselves an excuse saying, well, I wasn't really trying. Almost. And I feel like those kids do that in that game. And I'm like, come on, guys, that's like, you got to get away from that, because that'll follow you through the rest of your life.
100%. It's, we can't be scared of the things that are scary to us, because that's like, that's where all the answers are unlocked. It's in that scary, dark place.
Right.
We got to go there. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome, Nelson. Well, listen, two things. One, we're going to, at the end, we'll point people to find more about you and watch your TED Talk and find you on LinkedIn and all that stuff. We'll post that in the show notes, but I want to give you a chance to point everybody in the right direction. But I always love to ask the question at the end of these kind of conversations, and, you know, with all the things that you dove into, you know, and you said, you know, you were in a spot where you're like, man, if I kept going down that same road, I'm not going to be in where I want to be financially. So if you could go back to your younger self, what is the number one piece of advice you would give yourself, or the things that you know now that you didn't know then that you wish you knew? Is there anything that comes to mind when it comes to kind of going back and giving yourself a piece of advice that you didn't know now, or that you know now that you didn't know then?
Ooh, hitting me where it hurts, man. No, for me, I think it's very simple. Like I'm a simple minded kind of person, right? And I think if I could turn back, you know, time 20 years to when I got my first job, if I knew, and for all of you out there who are listening, who, you know, maybe you're a teenager, you have kids who are getting their first jobs, please, like, just try to hammer this home. If you can save 10% of your take home pay, like 10%, it's not that much, and find a way to invest that money into something that, you know, maybe it's the S&P 500 or something like that, an index fund or an ETF or something that will grow over time. And you do that consistently every paycheck. So maybe that's two times a month, or even just once a month. In 20, 30 years, you're going to get so much further financially than you ever imagined possible. And I know it's very cliche, but like, I'm an accountant, I'm a CPA, I've done the math, like, and the math really checks out. And if, you know, if I could turn back time, that's one thing that I would do. It's very simple. Yeah. 10%, put it away, invest it for the long term.
100% agree. You don't realize how fast, when you're in your 20s, you think that 5 years is an eternity. And when you're in your 50s, you're like, man, that flew by in the blink of an eye. And you don't realize that the time value of having those investments in there over a longer period of time. So I brought back, or I said, if you can look at this for a longer time horizon, and it doesn't have to be, you don't have to put 50 grand into an investment. You can, like, 10%, like you said, what's the book, The Richest Man in Babylon? Well, that concept, yep. Right? Take 10% of your earnings and put it away and just consistently do it over time. And if you start that young, I totally agree with you. You have no idea how much better of a position you're going to be in 20, 30, 40 years from now. And it is a massive difference when you really look at the numbers. And you're not trying, you're just loading the bases with base hits. You're not trying to hit home runs. You're putting it, like you said, just put it in the S&P 500. If you have nowhere else to put it in an index fund, just something simple that you're putting that away. You are going to be massively ahead of where you think you're ever going to be by just doing something simple like that. Okay, where should we go to find more about Nielsen? So,
yeah, no, thank you everybody for listening. This was an amazing conversation and just stuff I love to talk about. I think we made some people better today. And if you want to learn more about my journey, about my story, or just follow along with the content that I post, you can find me on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn, just under my name, Nelson So, and I'm also on TikTok. So posting content on there. You can also find our book, Life Literacy, at lifeliteracybook.com. And grab a copy, share it with a friend. If you enjoy it, I'd love to hear from you.
Love it. Awesome. And we'll post all of those links, you guys, in the show notes. You know, you guys know, I love these conversations. I know you guys do as well. We get a lot of feedback on our expert interviews. So Nielsen, this has been awesome. It's been really a pleasure to have you on the show. Those of you that are listening, we know how valuable your time is. We appreciate you spending it with us. It means a lot. You guys know that we don't run ads or sponsorships on the show. Never have, never plan to. I like to talk about what I want to talk about, not what other people want me to talk about. So the only way this show grows is if you guys share it. And we've been growing like crazy. So that's a big thank you to you guys. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. That way those platforms will start to share it as well with other people like you, because the algorithm figures out who's liking it and sharing it, and we'll put it in front of more people. So those things are very much appreciated. I ask you that at the end of every show. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode is pick that one thing you can do today, start living that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.